Now we find here the priests and high priests now come under the purview of the law. Let's look at it. Verse 1. And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say unto them, there shall none be defiled for the dead among the people. Death, you see, is the penalty of sin. And the idea is that they are not to be contaminated with sin of any kind. Now in verses 2 and 3, but for his kin that is near unto him, that is for his mother, for his father, for his son, for his daughter, for his brother, sister, a virgin that is nigh unto him, which hath no husband, for her may he be defiled. In other words, the priest was permitted to defile himself for close relatives. You see, these listed here are all blood relations, and by nature, they were close to the priest. In other words, he must be permitted to express his feelings of sympathy and grief as a priest. He must be a type of Jesus who could weep at the grave of Lazarus, and he was touched with the feeling of our infirmities. But he was not, however, permitted to defile himself for the dead of any others. He could mourn in his heart, but was denied physical contact. Now, if you'll notice verse 4, but he shall not defile himself, being a chief man among his people, to profane himself. He's a chief man among the people. The office he occupied required of him a stricter separation than any common man among the people. Now, I hope I'm not misunderstood when I say this to you today. I have refrained from going to certain places, and I won't name them because I don't want to get involved with some people arguing about little picadillos. There are so many saints that are picky today, so I won't mention it. But I do not go to certain places. And the reason that I don't go is not because I think they're wrong. I think, frankly, I could go and it wouldn't bother me a bit. I really do. You know why I don't go? Because I'm an ordained minister. And as an ordained minister, I honestly think I could go better than you could go. Don't misunderstand me. I really do. But I don't go because of the influence that you might have as a minister. And I think that maybe it might be well for you deacons, you elders, you Sunday school teachers, and you preachers to turn that over two or three times in your own mind. God is going to hold you and me more responsible than anyone else. Now, let me read on. We are told here, verse 5, they shall not make a baldness upon the head, neither shall they shave off the corner of their beard, nor make any cuttings in their flesh. Now, this was something the heathen did. And they did it, by the way, as an act of mourning for the dead. And the priest was not to practice these superstitious pagan practices that were all around them. Now, verse 6, they shall be holy unto their God and not profane the name of their God, for the offerings of the Lord made by fire and the bread of their God they do offer, therefore they shall be holy. Their mourning was to befit those who were cupbearers of the king, the bread of their God. Their position demanded dignity and restraint as God's representatives. And I think it applies today to those who would serve. A bishop must be blameless as the steward of God, not self-will, not soon angry, not given to wine, and no striker, not given to filthy lucre, but a lover of hospitality, lover of good men, sober, just, holy, temperate. These are requirements that God puts down today. You see, that's Titus 1, 7, and 8. Then he says, they shall not take a wife that is a whore or profane, neither shall they take a woman put away from a husband, for he's holy unto his God. Thou shalt sanctify him therefore, for he offereth the bread of thy God. He shall be holy unto thee, for I, the Lord, which sanctify you, am holy. Now this has to do with his personal and private life. And in that he's to reveal the holiness of God because of his position. He shall not marry a harlot, profane woman, divorced person. Now, the reason that's given is because that he's serving God, the bread of thy God. He's a cupbearer for God. He represents God. Now, let me say this. I get many letters from both men and women that say, I've been divorced, and One man, I want to go into the ministry. Another woman says, I want to go to the mission field, but I was divorced many years ago. Would it be all right for me to go today? Well, may I say this? You can't generalize, and I don't want to generalize, but I do want to make this statement. This is a generalization. I think that it's almost sinful today the way that certain people who've had an unfortunate experience in their lives, many of them before they were saved, and they're shut out from an office because of that past experience of which they are not guilty at all. This is the word that I say when I write to these people, and I try to be helpful. I say, yes, you go ahead and prepare for the ministry, the mission field, but also be prepared to be hit right in the middle of your face by some saint who thinks he's speaking for God that will read the riot act to you. Also, you will find out there are certain churches that will shut you out. But you go ahead, because there will be a place for you today, and there is. My feeling is that today we need to recognize that there are a great many people in this modern world that are innocent in these matters that have to do with divorce. Certainly, the wife of the minister, she doesn't have to play the organ or the piano or be president of the missionary society. A friend of mine, when he was called to church, he said, when he got there the first Sunday, he says, remember, I'm the pastor. My wife is not the assistant pastor. She's my wife, and that's all she's going to do, just be my wife. And that's all she's asked to do today. But she can, she must be the kind of person that would be a credit to the office that the man occupies.